Everyone's asleep.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting from New Zealand, the wonderful, the fabulous, the refluoridated district of Waikato, is where my very special guest, Evelyn Gilbert, is in at the moment, which is great, because we need a report from somebody who has, shall we say, background knowledge of a region so retarded that to be relieved of toxicity without your consent is something that they protest and reverse. Evelyn, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me, Vinny.
Her website, ladies and gentlemen, is Aotearoa, a wider perspective.wordpress.com. Today, we're going to be talking about a New Zealand politician by the nomenclature Crusher, otherwise known as Crusher Collins, Judith Collins. Now, there's a word that rhymes with hunt, And the word face, and it's just the kind of face that she has. I do believe it's quite horrific, terrifying, and allegedly the entire region where she's from also looks like this. Evelyn, welcome to the program.
I wouldn't say exactly like that, but pretty much the same. Yeah.
God doesn't have a sense of humour in the Waikato way here. He's just like a really dark lord, you know, like Sauron. He's not exactly handing out the freebies or the good fortune to all the good little boys and girls. So, speaking of Crusher, what kind of news have you got for us, Evelyn?
Well, there's not so much news as that she just has this incredible skill at hanging on in her function as minister. For those of you who don't know about this, she has just been to China, where she was going to speak about and discuss with the leaders human rights issues. But she used that time to discuss financial advantages for her husband's dairy company. And, of course, a lot of people would like to see her leave because that, of course, is a huge conflict of interest, Vinny.
Exactly. In what way? And can we define this and sort of flesh out the issue here?
What do you mean?
Well, let's talk about in terms of how much financial interest and conflict of interest are we talking about here? Like, how big is her husband's farm? What do they stand to gain?
I wouldn't know about the exact size, but the company itself has been known to donate the grand total of $85,000 to the National Party coffers in exchange for these conversations she's had with Chinese officials under the guise of a, you know, a friendly meal, which in China, by the way, is the preferred way of doing business.
Can I ask what exact ministership does Judith Collins have? She's the Minister for Justice, isn't she?
Yes, she is. Okay. Yes, she is.
So what would the Minister of Justice in New Zealand and any Chinese officials know about human rights exactly? Other than violating them and knowing how to do so without getting busted. Like,
well, in her job as Justice Minister, she would, of course, have some reason to discuss human rights and human rights issues. The thing is, though, why would a small country with only 4 million people get in the way of a juggernaut of 1 billion people such as China? There is just no way you can discuss human rights and expect them to listen. You know, it's a joke. So
that would be like the residents of Chatham Islands telling New Zealand what to do.
Yeah, exactly. And that, of course, would never happen. Other than that, of course, China, which is on the verge of collapsing financially and which has a lot of extremely rich elite party members who are all just dying to get out of China with their ill-gotten gains and the money they print out of thin air. I mean, China prints about $250 billion a month at the moment to just kick the can down the road. All that money goes to the elite. It goes to the cronies of the elite. And these people are all buying farms, land, apartments. In London the other day, somebody bought an apartment for over $250 million. We're talking six-room silly apartment. So we're talking about a group of people who is just really, really keen to get out of China.
Now, incidentally, a coffee sponsor of mine who we're going to be launching shortly used to work in Vietnam during the mid to late 90s, and he was doing business with a Chinese diplomat, and this diplomat told him that New Zealand's on their list. And he goes, "What list?" And he goes, "Well, countries we're going to take over." And he goes, what do you mean? How are you going to do that? Are you going to invade with armies and stuff?" And they go, no. "We've got plenty of political dissidents and things like that in China that we don't need or want. And we've got plenty of money that we can make up out of thin air. So we're just going to stuff a whole bunch of money in their pockets, send them to New Zealand, and instruct them to buy homes and small businesses."
And no, that's very interesting.
And before you know it, we'll own New Zealand. And my friend returned home and in the mid-2000s, after hearing that about 10 years ago, and he was like, pretty successful, weren't they?
Oh, yeah, and in this particular case, it becomes even more interesting. Orifida is a dairy company, and they're selling milk to China, and that milk gets bottled and branded and gets sold at a ridiculously high price. But not just that. What just has come out is that Orifida also now has bought huge swaths of land north of Auckland and on the west coast of the South Island. And while that land is used as dairy land, it is also known to have gold under it. And they are now prospecting and they want to start digging up gold.
Well, what's the ramifications for that? I mean, how are they exactly going to get all these permits and what? Oh, yeah, that's right. We've got corporate banksters in control of the country that rip up natural land for resources all the time.
And some of it already has permits, has consent. So, and this makes it even more curious because, of course, you know, New Zealand itself doesn't have gold in its coffers. It doesn't have a gold storage. And at this moment, we're looking at China buying up every ounce of gold they can get their hands on, not just the government, but the people of China, because they know full well that the fiat currency system that is still being used in the Western world, which is based on absolutely nothing because America also sold its gold from Fort Knox to India and China, primarily China and Russia. And what that means is that we're now basically saying, yeah, sure, dig up our land and take the gold with you to China. Although our money is worth absolutely nothing.
Yeah, I mean, how are we going to back up the economy after all of this? You know, I don't think trading in Coromandel gold is going to work quite as well.
No, it won't. And so if you're saying, well, they want to buy up New Zealand, I'd say they'd probably be done by now. You know, they're buying all our profitable land and arable land, dairy companies. It turns out now mineable gold, which is financially, you know, which is profitable enough to do. And so, you know, I know that not 5 kilometers away from where I live, they are now prospecting for Black Sands, Chinese company, China Steel, or Sino Steel, is now prospecting for what they can find in the Black Sands, which apart from iron ore has titanium and other precious metals in there. And so, you know, it could be that maybe in a couple of years I can actually see the sea from where I live now, which I can't now because they're digging away the dunes.
Well, that sounds like a wonderful idea, you know, for your retirement and what have you. All this wonderful natural scenery that has now got a gargantuan gaping hole and large lakes of sulfuric acid. That stuff's really good. Oh, wait. No. It's not sulfuric acid, is it? That they use to clean off all the gold mining and everything like that?
No, that's cyanide, isn't it? Cyanide. Or mercury.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Of course. Why would they use an acid, Vinny, that would eat the thing that they're trying to steal?
What is also interesting is that Trans-Tasman Mining is currently trying to get a permit to start mining seabed black sands at Taranaki, which has a fallout along the entire west coast of the North Island, all the way up to Auckland and further, and which will create a huge death zone, and that black sand will also go to China.
You know, it just keeps getting better and better. I can't wait to see what they're going to unveil next year.
Or tomorrow.
Yeah. Hey, well, at least life is getting a little bit more exciting. I wonder what different way they're going to launch some kind of scumbaggery campaign to make me and my countrymen homeless today.
Yep.
Am I losing my sense of humour about this sort of thing? I don't think so. Hey, look, I wonder exactly how we can deal with this situation other than through humour. Because you go to the authorities and you tell them about these kind of things. You got evidence. You got everything you need to prove your case and exactly what all of these scum are doing. But unfortunately, the very authorities that are elected to frickin' protect you from these foreign scum are employed by said foreign scum to enrich said foreign scum.
Sure. I mean, John Key, after he's done, he doesn't care if National implodes. He will leave. He will get a nice cushy job and, you know, he'll probably travel around the globe convincing people that they should accept the Queen as the head of state, and not just the Queen, but the generations to come, which is, by the way, what he said he would do when he came away from Balmoral last year. People like Judith Collins will probably do the same.
There's just one big kettle of fish, you know. New Zealand, ladies and gentlemen, is not a country that, as the Transparency International Index would suggest, the least corrupt country in the world. If anything, it's kind of the opposite, an inversion. It's a nation where all of the people that are supposed to report corruption are so corrupt that they don't report any of it. It's all pervasive. You've got to love that. Moving on to the second half of the interview, we have NATO involvement in the Ukraine, I hear now, Evelyn.
Well, Yes, we do. In fact, at this moment, 6,000 troops, NATO troops from Sweden, ranging as far as Holland, the Netherlands, Sweden, England, Canada, France, they're all training in Poland and other Baltic countries. And while they're saying they're doing this just to protect those countries, you might wonder why it is that they're there. Added to that, there is a lot of army out of uniform which has been caught and arrested in the Ukraine, and they are advisors and to the new Ukrainian unelected government.
And? You know, well, what else is new?
Okay, you know? because of course, you know, we're here in New Zealand. What is so interesting about New Zealand at the moment is that in July 2012 or June 2012, I'm not sure, John Key signed an entirely new treaty, a new pact with NATO. A lot of people think it was just an extension of the older agreement, but he signed a brand spanking new pact with them. If you want to check this, go to the NATO site and search for a New Zealand agreement pact, and you will find all this. It's all out there on NATO, which is amazing, on the website. And what not a lot of people know is that last year there was a NATO training exercise, and I'm calling this NATO even though they didn't, on the South Island called Southern Katipo. And there were the Five I countries, it's all the Anglo-Saxon countries, France, and several countries that are on the verge of becoming Pacific members of NATO, because NATO wants to have at least 60% of its troops and resources stationed in the Pacific in the next 6 years. So
that,
you know,
might have something to do with protecting the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement's agenda. I don't know. Better yet, oceanic unionization, so that the troops can be everywhere to quell any domestic insurrection. No, we don't want to be slaves to a global empire.
Yeah. Well, I would say that the TPP actually is just a political arm of the same agreement. But what happened with Southern Katipo was that the scenario of that exercise was regime change.
It was, what was it, to invade New Zealand via beach landing and depose a democratically elected prime minister. Wasn't that the directive of the training exercise?
Well, they said, of course, to make it sort of sellable, that it was a leader who refused to step down after an election. The issue is that whether it's someone who doesn't want to step down, or whether it's a democratically elected leader, you are not entitled to go into a country and affect regime change. That is a war crime. So what they were effectively doing was training for a war crime. New Zealand was allowing to have 10 countries, including itself, all of whom were either long-term NATO members or on the verge of becoming members of NATO, and they were training for regime change. Not only that, at the same time they were training here, they were training in the Baltic countries on defending the Baltic countries, you know, Finland, Lettland, Lithuania, you know, Poland, defending against an invasion of a big country to the northeast of those countries. Well, there's only one big country to the northeast of those countries, that's Russia. Not only that, New Zealand was also involved in a training exercise in England for NATO with the quick response team. They are now having a quick response team. And what this, of course, amounts to is the fact that NATO wants to be the global army. And they are training different countries, and they're using soldiers from different countries, so that if they have to invade a country that they would otherwise not invade, they can always say, well, it's not the Russians invading or the Germans invading Holland. We're just using German soldiers to come down on the Dutch if they were to rebel against NATO rule. Or, you know, we have Australian soldiers here, or Polish or Ukrainian soldiers if we decide to say, no, we don't want to be members of NATO anymore.
Mm. Well, throughout history, it has been noted that if you want to suppress a population, using people who were born in that country is not a good idea because they refuse to shoot their countrymen. But if you bring in foreigners, on the other hand, they have no such qualms.
No, and or if even if you say, okay, well, we're going to have a couple of New Zealanders to make it legitimate to New Zealand population, but the rest of them are, you know, French.
It's like collaborators in a takeover bid, you know?
Yeah.
That's what it is.
So that's what they're working on at the moment. And what is happening in the Ukraine is interesting because they've been wanting control of the Ukraine, and they've been in particular wanting control over East Ukraine and the Crimea, because of course the Crimea is the only way the Russians have access to the Mediterranean area where they can assist Syria. So to get rid of that access was one of the primary targets. And by saying, nah, you're not going to have Crimea, they sort of stopped that.
Mm. Well, you know, can't these people just learn to get along? I mean, you know, couldn't they, learn to Chernobyl in the in the Ukrainian Republic, you know, earlier in the day? Or is it just all the foreign scum coming in and New World Order clowns?
Ukraine is a fictitious country.
It doesn't exist. I've been there and there was nothing. It was just a big hole in the ground covered by a sheet of tarpaulin.
No. What I'm trying to say is that in the First World War, there was, you know, you had this whole national thing. I mean, there were no big countries. There were tribes, you know. Germany only came into existence, I don't know, 125 years ago. Italy, 100 years ago, you know. So the Ukraine was just, there was an area that was called Ukraine. That meant something like at the border. But there was a group of people who said, we would like to have a Ukrainian fatherland. And the Germans said, what do you mean? What is Ukraine? There was no Ukraine. But the Germans then helped this little group to establish a Ukraine with part of Russia in exchange, or so they hoped, for grain, for pork, for eggs, for food. So Ukraine has, you know, if you look at the map of Ukraine over the centuries, at least 2/3 of it have always been Russian. And the people that are now being killed in Odessa and all the other places are Russians. They identify with Russia. They don't identify with Ukraine. They just happen to live in an area that is called Ukraine. But it is just something that somebody thought would be handy to have, and that's how it was established.
It must be handy for people who want to divide and conquer other people.
Extremely handy.
You know, it's like I got my bag of tricks here. What have we got up here? Well, we got a random country name, you know, region, regional dominance, paid off dictators. Here's one. We'll make up a country.
Yes, exactly.
It's like a bag of tricks, like a magician, more or less. Except instead of pulling a rabbit out of the hat, they pull out a nuke. Wasn't there some? You were telling me before the show today about some crazed woman who wants to drop a nuke on the Ukraine or something?
Yeah, Julia Tymoshenko. She's amazing. She was in jail, and she was in jail for a good reason. She's one of the most corrupt politicians the country has ever seen.
That's where she got the nickname Shanko, by the way, because she stabbed somebody with a shank. She made it out of a toothbrush.
Anyway, so she was liberated, and she was the ultimate victim. And anyway, so a couple of weeks ago, a telephone conversation was released with her saying, "What we have to do is we have to nuke," and we're talking about a lot of people, 8 million people, I think. We have to bomb them with a nuclear bomb, and we have to just kill them all, the Russians.
Yeah, that'll really calm the situation down.
Well, what has happened now, just today, a video was released wherein this woman said, "I want to thank the people who fought in Odessa." And what happened in Odessa was, of course, a hideous massacre of civilians by members of Svoboda and the ultra right, who hold 46 seats in the Kiev government, and who have direct links with the Nazi Party history, who collaborated with the Germans in the Second World War. And they to this day feel that they should kill all the Jews and that all the Russians should be killed. And so these people haunted a group of people who tried to escape in the Union building. And not only did they just set fire to the place, but they actually went in there and raped and killed and shot a lot of people, after which they torched the place with Molotov cocktails and burned another 40 people or so alive. I mean, it was a hideous crime, and there was nothing noble about it, except in the crazed minds of people like Yulia Tymoshenko.
Evelyn Gilbert from Aotearoa, A Wider Perspective, .wordpress.com has been my guest. Go and check out her website if you can. Also, bear in mind, ladies and gentlemen, this is a listener-supported broadcast. So if you go to the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, that's Vinnie with a Y because it's the most important question, and Eastwood as in go ahead, make my news. There are PayPal buttons there, and also a Kiwi Bank account if you're capable of figuring out how to do an automatic payment into either of those. It'd be much obliged. Just keeps all the finances coming in. Listener-supported radio. Let's expose the scumbaggery. Let's not rely on big evil corporations. We'll be right back.